Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
It's in the singing of a street corner choir. It's going home and getting warm by the fire. It's true, wherever you find love, it feels like Christmas.
Welcome to the Hi-Low Christmas Special, the weekly pop culture and current affairs podcast.
Hello.
I voted for Santa Baby to ring us in because I thought it was quite a sexy little number to get us all feeling a little...
I'm so sorry, I won on this occasion because what you are hearing is the Muppet Christmas Carol soundtrack and I have gone tits deep.
Dolly won by going, I'm really invested in this right now.
I am so obsessed with the Muppet Christmas Carol.
Is that the new, like... Do you think that's the new, like, sort of trump card? I'm really invested in this.
Do you know what? I've always really loved that film. And for some reason, it's having this weird sort of millennial nostalgic reboot.
They all are. I downloaded Home Alone a couple of days ago.
Oh, my God, I love Home Alone. But I went to a Muppet Christmas Carol sing-along at the Prince Charles Theatre in Soho
last week. I wish you could see my face, dear listeners.
And me and all my friends wore Muppet masks.
What animal were you?
I was Kermit and the frog, and you go along. I cannot recommend it enough. And they have like subtitles, so you sing along with all the songs. And every time that Michael Caine as Scrooge comes on, everyone boos. And I loved it.
Is that a drinking game?
No, there was a lot of booze there. I was so ill that day, so I literally went like in my pyjamas with this huge coat on, shuffled in, put a Kermit mask on, croaked along to some songs, shuffled out, straight back into an Uber home. I was actually out for 2 hours just to go there, and I loved it so much that I'm going back there again. So if you're a Muppet Christmas Carol fan, it has brought me extraordinary joy. And I just... it's... all I've listened to since is the soundtrack. It's a masterpiece. And I wrote about it in last week's Sunday Times. I'm fucking obsessed.
I feel almost baby
ill. I'm ill on it.
You do.
And yet I need more.
You do gorge. You have a dangerous relationship with things that you like.
I know.
You're either like completely repulsed or dangerously obsessed.
I know, that's
dangerously.
Where I am. That's right.
How are you faring in the Christmas countdown? We're just going to pause while Dolly has a sip of her Cremant and Cassis.
Oh, very nice. Thank you, Evanes, for the Cremant. I've been told that we're saying this wrong. Cremant. It's not Cremant. It's
Cremant.
Cremant, like mammal.
Well, I have learnt since we had a very chic sponsor of Moët and Chandon. Everyone calls it Moët. It's Moët.
It's Moët.
And only and Dolly and I know.
And how embarrassing truth. For the rest of them. How absolutely appalling.
Well, I find I can't possibly correct people at parties.
Where the Moët flows freely at every party Pandora and I go to.
That's a joke, by the way. It definitely doesn't. It's Sainsbury's Prosecco all the way, and very nice that is too. So, Dolly, how are you faring in the Christmas countdown?
Little bit ropey. I cannot get over this cold, and I thought that I could just power through with booze and parties and sequin jumpsuits and be fine, and I'm just feeling awful. I had my kind of pretend Christmas with my friends last weekend, and I drank so much Baileys that it had the same effect physically as ketamine.
Well, you went into a beehole.
Couldn't feel my legs, had no sense of space or time. Kept envisaging.
Do you think
that
this is what the people want from the Christmas special?
It's very Christmassy, ketamine. Kept envisaging myself across the room. I was so all over the place. And it was just simply from pure Baileys.
That is riveting.
Pint after pint after pint of this stuff.
So creamy as well.
I know.
Sloshing around like knickers.
I know. I was sloshing around.
Oh, no, knickers is... no, he doesn't make milk. Anyway, we'll work on that. I was faring quite well until I decided to catch myself a little bit of pre-Christmas norovirus. Christ alive, I forget the violence of it.
Pandora, that
rips
that was,
through you.
I think that was the first time with you and I, because Pandora and I basically WhatsApp all day, every day, and have done for the last 4 years. It was the first time where you messaged me in the morning and you're like, I feel really, really bad. And I said, don't worry, I'm across stuff. I'll do high-low stuff. Don't worry, just go back to bed. And then you literally didn't emerge back on communication.
So it was the first time I've done what you told me to do.
You didn't emerge back for like 24 hours, and then your little head poked out in WhatsApp and you're like, I'm alive, I'm back. But you've never done that before. You mean you must have been literally just holed up in bed.
I was not well, which is why this is hitting your ears a few days late. I was, however, doing quite well before then. I think I'm making up for last year when I didn't go to any Christmas parties because I was 400 years pregnant and moving house. But Uber is making a killing out of me. I wish you could get loyalty points, because if you could, I'd be able to hire a Hummer for your party tomorrow night. I would come, like, you know, literally when you got, like, the ghetto blaster just pumping my way through Camden.
I would still love it if you could do that.
I do. It reminds me of when I accidentally ordered an Uber. Is it an Uber exec or like an Uber Lux?
And they run out and they open the door for you like a limo.
And yeah, they opened the door great. And I had sweeties and water and it cost me £38 to take a 10-minute journey. That's the first and last.
I also have a question about Uber. I can't remember. I'm avoiding Uber at the moment because I can't remember the last time that I got in an Uber and it wasn't on surge price.
Yeah, I did a 1.8 last night.
It's a lot.
Saturday night was... I spent more time in Ubers than at parties on Saturday. This is what happens by trying to do multiple parties. Now, it's not easy. It's not really fun for anyone involved. But it's very important with your Christmas obligations that you try and show your face, I think, when friends have gone to an effort.
This is because Pandora is, like, loyal as a huffy old...
No, Pandora is Catholic and duty-bound.
No, you are as loyal as a shaky-legged... Wheezy Labrador. Little old Labrador. You're the most loyal person. There's no way I would have gone to... She went to three parties on Saturday.
I went
and
to
literally,
two.
But they were all different...
I spent more time in Ollie and I, because Ollie was with me, we spent more time in Ubers than at the parties, which was hilarious. It was useful, though, because it meant even though we got back at 2 a.m, I was still sober. I hadn't had any time to get drunk.
Can I just say, you never have to be that loyal to me. I never, ever want you spending 2 hours in an Uber on a Saturday night just to show your face at one of my shit parties.
You say that, but if I suddenly stopped doing it, you might miss it.
Do you know what you did
do? You might miss my shaky little legs.
You know, wheezing in. What you did do for my 28th birthday, which was just the classiest fucking thing anyone's ever done, is you couldn't come to my birthday lunch. Do you remember Sarah hosted, my friend
ill.
Sarah hosted like a big birthday lunch for all,
God,
all
I was
my
Ill
girlfriends.
Again, yeah.
And you were ill, so you couldn't come. And you sent me these like really Catholic mad messages feeling so like sad and worried about it. And I was like, don't worry about it. And then an enormous bouquet of flowers just turned up halfway through the lunch.
It's quite Mr. Big, that.
All my friends were like, she's so Mr. Big.
But also, Dolly references it quite with such regularity to me that I remain sure that she would always rather I didn't come and instead sent a sort of ostentatiously large, bank-ruiningly expensive boot. It was more expensive for me to not go to that party than it was.
You say that. I wrote in my first column, my new column for the Sunday Times, I said in it as like a piece of life advice. I was like, just to let you know, when you get into your 30s, no one cares if you can't go to parties anymore, as long as you have a bottle of champagne or Prosecco like delivered to the person in front of all their friends with someone's, and the barman says, Pandora sends her apologies, she can't be here, but happy birthday and whatever. And the friend always prefers it because it means they look super popular. It adds a sort of elegant, sophisticated Manhattan
frisson
to the whole thing. So I wrote this in a column, and then the following week I couldn't go to my friend's birthday. So I flaked out. So I just immediately rang the bar and I was like, can you just, you know, stick a bottle of champagne in front of her? And Farley went to the party and she said that she just saw this champagne being taken over to the girl. She's like, Dolly, I can't be asked to be here, obviously. She was like, by the way, doll, it doesn't work when you've written it in a column as a piece of advice as how to flake out on everyone.
That's amazing. The dolly can't be asked to be here champagne. It's quite an expensive apology. How was the rest of Pretendmas? What jolly little games did you get trolleyed to?
It just got all... It all went south so quickly. Because we
That's most
all...
unlike you and your friends.
We all just... It was the Baileys is where it all went really wrong. And I do think it was the sugar, actually, not the alcohol in it. I think it was the sugar that made us go so squiffy. And I had a big row with Alexa because I just kept shouting at Alexa to play the Muppet Christmas.
So you mean
Carol
the electronic
soundtrack.
Alexa?
Yes. And I was, because I was a bit
She couldn't understand.
I was in a bit of an altered state. I was convinced that she wasn't playing me the soundtrack, so her and I had this sort of long back and forth for quite a while.
What would she say? I am playing it.
Everyone was like, she's definitely playing it. But this is when I was like slightly in my Bailey's K-hole and convinced that she wasn't. So that was a good sort of hour.
You bullied Alexa.
Yeah, I have to say, do you have an Alexa?
I have a Google Home.
I don't know how I feel about it. Do you talk to your Google Home?
Only to say, please play Jazz FM.
Don't you worry that he's listening to your life?
Oh, yeah, I've heard that. I mean, I think we're all, you know, fucked, really. We're all going to hell in a hell cart or wherever it is.
Handbasket.
That's it. I mean, we're all going in a handbasket, so...
I forgot how much I love the Christmas special.
Who cares, really? I've had, like, 2 sips of Cremant or whatever the fuck it is. I am quite tired, to be fair.
Last year, you were bloody pregnant for the Christmas special. I've never quite forgiven you for it.
I can tell. I recently read a reading at the Lullaby Trust's Christmas Carol concert that tickled me so much I thought I might read it here to get us all into the jovial, festive spirit. Hopefully you're listening to it. We're just a few days to go. It will be a few days to go,
yeah.
when this comes out, a little bit late after my norovirus. Perhaps as we are, aided by some Christmas cocktails made by Cremant herself. 12 Days of Christmas, a correspondence by John Julius Norwich. 25th of December. My dearest darling, that partridge in that lovely pear tree. What an enchanting, romantic, poetic present. Bless you and thank you. Your deeply loving Emily. 26th of December. My dearest darling Edward, the 2 turtle doves arrived this morning. They're cooing away in the pear tree as I write. I'm so touched and grateful. With undying love, as always, Emily. 27th of December. My darling Edward, you do think of the most original presents. Whoever thinks of sending anybody 3 French hens? Do they really come all the way from France? It's a pity that we have no chicken coops, but I expect we'll find some. Thank you anyway, they're lovely. Your loving Emily. 28th of December. Dearest Edward, what a surprise! 4 calling birds arrived this morning. They're very sweet, even if they do call rather loudly. They make telephoning impossible. But I expect they'll calm down when they get used to their new home. Anyway, I'm very grateful. Of course I am. Love from Emily. 29th of December. Dearest Edward, the postman just delivered 5 most beautiful gold rings, 1 for each finger, and all fitting perfectly. A really lovely present. Lovelier, in a way, than the birds, which do take rather a lot of looking after. The 4 that arrived yesterday are still making a terrible row, and I'm afraid none of us got much sleep last night. Mummy says she wants us to use the rings to wring their necks. She's only joking, I think, although I know what she means. But I love the rings, bless you. Love, Emily. 30th of December. Dear Edward, whatever I expected to find when I opened the front door this morning, it certainly wasn't 6 socking great geese laying eggs all over the doorstep. Frankly, I rather hoped you'd stop sending me birds. We've got no room for them and they've already ruined the croquet lawn. I know you meant well, but let's call a halt, shall we? Love, Emily. 31st of December. Edward, I thought I said no more birds, but this morning I woke up to find no less than 7 swans all trying to get into the tiny goldfish pond. I'd rather not think what happened to the goldfish. The whole house is now full of birds, to say nothing of what they leave behind. Please, please stop. Your Emily. 1st of January. Frankly, I think I prefer the birds. What am I to do with 8 milkmaids and their cows? Is this some kind of joke? If it is, I'm afraid I don't find it very amusing. Emily. 2nd of January. Look here, Edward, this has gone far enough. You say you're sending me 9 ladies dancing. All I can say is that judging from the way they dance, they're certainly not ladies. The village just isn't accustomed to seeing a regiment of shameless hussies with nothing on but their lipstick cavorting around the green. Mummy and I just get blamed. If you value our friendship, which I do less and less, kindly stop this ridiculous behaviour at once. Emily. 3rd of January. As I write this letter, 10 disgusting old men are prancing about all over what used to be the garden before the geese and the swans and the cows got at it. Several of them, I notice, are taking inexcusable liberties with the milkmaids. Meanwhile, the neighbours are trying to have us evicted. I shall never speak to you again. Emily. 4th of January. This is the last straw. You know I detest bagpipes. The place has become something between a menagerie and a madhouse, and a man from the council has just declared it unfit for habitation. At least Mummy has been spared the outrage. They took her away yesterday in an ambulance. I hope you're satisfied. 5th of January. Sir, our client, Miss Emily Wilbraham, instructs me to inform you that with the arrival on her premises at 7:30 this morning of the entire percussion section of the Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra and several of their friends, she has no course left open to her but to seek an injunction to prevent you importuning her further. I am making arrangements for the return of much assorted livestock. I am, sir, yours faithfully, G. Creep, Solicitor at Law.
That's great! Did you read that aloud?
I read that in church and I got to the bit. I hadn't practiced it and I got to the bit in church about the shameless hussies divorcing. And I just looked to the like choir of baby angels who were about 6 years old. I was just like, sorry to whoever's
up
there.
Oh, I love that.
I know, it's quite jolly, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Speaking of discoveries, did you like the Space Ghettos meme sent on our official meme WhatsApp group that Ollie set up?
Oh, I haven't seen that.
This is absolutely
on the
amazing.
Group.
So
he's been pretty active.
He's been
the
prolific.
Last couple of days.
He has. Christmas is coming. He's got very excited.
Let me see which one.
So basically, if you want to say Spice Girls in a Scottish accent,
oh yes, it's great.
Just say Space Ghettos in an American one. Give it a go. It's so good.
Space Ghettos is good.
Space Ghettos. CJ, have a go.
Space Ghettos.
Anyway, that was quite jolly.
That was very jolly.
Have you got any jovial and uplifting news for the Christmas special?
I do. And this is courtesy of Friend of the Hilos, India Masters. A vet in Hitchin, dressed up as a giant mouse, to examine a nervous rescue dog. Rupert the Dalmatian needed specialist orthopaedics. Rupert the Dalmatian needed specialist orthopaedic surgery at Davis Veterinary Specialists. But growled when the vet tried to touch him. To calm his nerves, vet Mike Farrell donned a mouse onesie sent by his owner to comfort him. I was really worried about him going into hospital and thought he might benefit from having the scent and sense of me with him, his owner, Ms. Schiff, said. I thought the mouse romper suit, which I often wear at home to relax... to relax in, would make a reassuring bed for him in the kennels. Mr. Farrell said the veterinary surgery did not usually allow bedding from home, but in this case they thought it had potential to help Rupert a lot. However, when the dog growled at him when he was wearing his normal clothes, he decided to go a step further and put on the giant mouse outfit. Rupert is now recovering from surgery. I think that's a lovely story, actually.
What's in ye old mailbag this week? Open up your mailbag!
I have an actual...
CJ, I've put actual... Can you hear that? That is the sound of some very jolly letters from Hilo listeners sloshing around. It's a bit like Dolly's tummy. Sloshing around the mailbag. That looks
quite
Christmassy.
This is a lovely card of...
what is it?
Some girls dressed in what appears to be a nativity scene. Looking
very nice.
A little bit well-oiled.
Yeah, open it up. What does she say?
Dear Pandora and Dolly, first and foremost, a very Merry Christmas to you both. I thought I'd send you a card to add to your oldie mailbag. I can't believe that is now a thing. Sealed with a wax seal as requested.
Oh my God, is it actually?
I'm currently awaiting...
yeah, what?
I'm currently awaiting the birth of my first child. I'm 4 days overdue. So I thought, what better way to distract myself than to make you ladies a crimbo card? The photo on the front was taken at my baby shower a few weeks ago. My dear friends insisted it be nativity themed on account of the fact that I'm called Mary, my partner Joseph. No way.
No.
That can't
no.
be true.
No.
And our baby is due to arrive in December. All very biblical.
That's amazing.
Really? I mean, that baby shower just planned itself, didn't it? Anyway, thought it might put a smile on both your lovely faces. I'm a huge fan. Pandora will hate me reading this bit and she'll ask me to cut it out later, but I think it's nice to sometimes read the compliments. I'm a huge fan of your podcast and other work. The podcast in particular has helped me to stay informed and educated in all sorts of subjects. As someone who lives in the depths of the Devonshire countryside, oh, Jilly, this isn't always easy to come by. Keep doing what you're doing because you're both fantastic. Love, Mary.
Love
Mary's vibe.
I really want her to call her child Jesus. I'm just saying we're all hoping.
She has to.
That's absolutely amazing.
Well, that's first idea.
I love that. My friends insisted on my baby shower being nativity.
So good. Okay.
Wax seal.
That's lovely calligraphy. Hang on, let me find that. Oh, there's a gift in this one.
Oh my God. That looks like a condom for a mouse.
Two very tiny plastic hands. Don't know how I feel about this. Hello, Hilo team. I wanted to send you a pair of tiny hands. I think you'll find them handy.
Oh my god, I'm
especially
obsessed
if you need a hand with something. They are silly, hilarious, brilliant to get out in the pub, would provide great Christmas family fun. Put one on a finger. Cover your hand with your sleeve. Perform a tiny hand actor. I suggest coughing, tapping someone on the shoulder, singing, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. I'll leave it there. Enjoy. Hilo fan and seller of tiny hands on eBay. At super tiny hands on the Insta.
I absolutely love the skepticism.
She said people tend to either love them or hate them, but if you're a hater, they do get funnier over time.
I like these. I like these.
Also, I like when you're so committed to a joke that if you just
set up a store, push it
and insist on it, then you promise everyone it will get funnier. Thank you for the tiny hands. Dear Pandora and Dolly, I'm writing to thank you both and CJ for keeping me entertained and informed during my first year of freelance life. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas and a very happy New Year, Kate.
I don't know how much entertaining CJ has done, but still, sweetheart.
See, you've got fans, Siege.
Quiet.
Someone asked me what CJ was like in real life the other day. Okay.
Oh, she didn't even answer.
Look at that.
What was it?
You just went, someone asked me what CJ was like in real life. Okay.
I said you were brilliant. Dear Dolly and Pandora, have a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from Hilo fan Louis.
Thanks, Louis.
Like that succinct.
We also got some really moving, lovely, heartfelt letters, some of which felt a little bit too weighty to read out aloud in this rather silly and daft episode, and it wouldn't do them justice. But thank you so much for your letters, and especially to the people who wrote to us when they were feeling in a really sad, dark place and said that the Hilo had given them a bit of lightness. We're really happy if we can provide anyone with that. And thank you to everyone who's wax sealed the fucking envelopes.
More
so
wax seals, please.
More wax seals. That's a commitment. Because it requires, like, a signature.
I love the old mailbag. I hope that continues into the new year.
What about the not nearly so interesting electronic mailbag? What's in that one, Dolly?
We got this interesting email on emotional labour at Christmas. In my household at Christmas, my mother did all of the present buying, all of the wrapping, and took on all of the stress of keeping the fable of Father Christmas alive to try and make each Christmas as magical as the last. In fact, I distinctly remembered how stressed my mother would be whilst my father would go to the pub with colleagues or play rounds of Christmas golf. I've never seen my father wrap a present, and as I've got older, he always gets me to do it. I'm aware that every household is different. However, after asking around, it does seem to be pretty common that Santa was mostly created by my friends' mothers, whilst all of the glory was hogged by a magical man. When you think of Mrs. Claus, you imagine her baking cookies for Santa or rubbing his feet after he's taken his trip around the world. Most people do not know Mrs. Claus's first name, so going forward, I'm going to argue that Santa Claus is, in fact, a woman.
That is entirely true of my family, but it's not true of my own marriage, which is perhaps a reflection of modern times. Things are changing. I have actually wrapped my own present from my father before. Have you seen the Santa is a woman hashtag on Instagram?
No, I haven't.
I think it's connected to a sponsored campaign, but I found it interesting. But I don't know if I think Santa is a woman personally, but I do think Mrs. Claus should get more credit, as our mailbag contributor suggests.
Maybe Santa is non-binary.
What do you think Mrs. Claus is called? I think she's called Teresa.
Bertha?
It's just a Bertha Claus.
Yeah.
Bertha Claus.
Bertha Claus. Teresa Claus is too
Doris
glam.
Claus. Doc Claus.
Doris Claus, yeah.
Support for the Hilo comes from new online lifestyle brand Truly. Truly creates living, fashion, beauty and baby collections with high quality products at affordable prices. From cleverly designed weekend bags to a leather tassel that doubles as a phone charger, all of the products have been created to make the everyday easier.
It's the week before Christmas and we're ready to get cosy at home, and we're doing so in style. Truly has gorgeous silk pyjamas, perfect for lounging.
How much do you love pyjamas, Pandora?
I change into pyjamas at 6:45 p.m. every evening if I'm home for the evening. Once I've put the baby to bed, it's like the end of her bedtime routine for me. My mother-in-law said to me the other day in surprise, "Are you going to bed?" And I said, "No, no, these silk pyjamas are just so delicious that I want to wear them all night, not just in bed."
Not even in bed. Oi, oi.
In or out of bed, Trudy's blush pink silk pyjamas with piping are the ultimate Christmas present. To our 5 male listeners, take note for your gals.
They come in blush or black and are in lovely sandwash silk with piping, so they're extra soft. We can't wait to wriggle into them and put on a good box set.
Browse the full collection at truly.co.uk.
Thank you very much to Trudy.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What have you been enjoying this week?
I have been enjoying lots of things during my convalescence, actually. Sex and Love Around the World. I think you'd find this fascinating, doll. Hosted by CNN's Christine Amanpour for Netflix. Episode 1 is in Tokyo, and it's fascinating. It leads on from a lot of what that Atlantic essay that we recently talked about with sex in Japan.
About diminishing.
Yeah, so she says sexless marriages seem to be a reality here. And then there's this really interesting segment on lots of single women who say being in love takes energy and we don't have any energy right now. And so a lot of them, straight women, read something called Boy Love, which is essentially homosexual manga cartoons. Ah. So it's, even though they're straight, that's the kind of erotic manga that they choose to read. And a talking head on the show, or maybe a psychologist, sorry, I can't exactly remember, but someone commenting said they don't want to be able to project themselves into that body. So they are so terrified of inhabiting, even like imaginatively being able to inhabit the body of the eroticism or the love stories they engage with, that they watch, despite being a straight woman, they will watch and read homosexual literature.
That's
which
so
I found that really interesting, because that was something I hadn't really heard
more
about.
And more I've heard straight women be
engaging with gay
material,
gay
male porn.
Well, I thought that was a very interesting reason why that they didn't want to even be able to inhabit it.
Like that, even that is too much emotional expenditure, even fantasy.
Yeah, 40% of the Japanese male population are virgins, and it's on the rise. Isn't that fascinating?
God, I've got to watch
this. I'm on episode 2 now in Delhi, just started. So I'm excited. I think there's 6 episodes, so that would be a good one to get the whole family into it for Christmas. I've just finished The Pact We Made by Leila Al-Amar, a book about a Kuwaiti woman, a novel about a Kuwaiti woman torn between two worlds, the ostensible modernity of Kuwait and the patriarchal traditional values which still imbues her family and a lot of society, which sees her lack of marriage by the age of 30 as an all-engulfing thing that all her family can think about. Her mother lines up endless men, but she refuses them all on principle. It also deals with how a society fails to address trauma, sexual trauma, and a specific traumatic incident that happened to her as a teenager, and how that might link to her reluctance to get married, and also her kind of absolute desperation to escape Kuwait and everything it stands for to her. It's a really interesting read. I was disappointed by the end. That's all I'm going to say about the plot. But I really enjoyed reading a novel set in Kuwait. Never read a novel in Kuwait, so I learned a lot about, admittedly, quite a specific narrative. Yeah. But it was really interesting to read something different. I also watched, when I was ill, The American Meme on Netflix. This is a truly astounding documentary, and
which
I was,
Pandora said last night at the Style Christmas party, is the absolute antithesis of anything I would ever be interested in.
I literally was like, Dolly will hate it. Dolly will hate it, because I didn't want Dolly, because I knew what Dolly would do. If she thought I wasn't stating that she was allowed to hate it, then she'd kind of let me explain it to her, and then the familiar glaze would come over. And I'd have to carry on, like, flogging my wares to her.
Okay, I want to know.
So you won't like it. This is not for you. So it's called The American Meme on Netflix. I actually just interviewed a celebrity and she was saying that she was absolutely obsessed with it as well. So the access and the production of this documentary is incredible. It's a heady combination of pathos and vulgarity. There's a real mix of... As a former story producer, Dolly, I think you'd find it very interesting the kind of... the oxymoronity.
Yeah.
Oxymoronicness.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you do that tense?
Oxymoronity.
Moronicism. Not a word.
Oxymoronicism. Charlie just did a sort of...
Oxycontin. No, I'm joking.
Half-baked nod. What do you think it is?
Oxymoronicism.
Yeah.
Okay. The oxymoronicism of a lot of things that come to the fore. So Paris Hilton, the roster of kind of big internet meme artists, people who have built very successful careers on the internet, people who shape the popular culture that basically people like my husband enjoy and send to us every day.
Yeah.
The assemblage of the people they've got for this documentary is like top-notch, top dollar. Paris Hilton, who essentially gave the birth to internet fame and internet culture in the early noughties, she now has 19 different product lines, and her fragrance line alone has made $3 billion. So she is incredibly interesting about how she dealt with the sex tape that came out when she was 19, and she was this kind of young hotel heiress cavorting around New York with her 15-year-old sister, and how it completely changed and how she wanted to die, and then how she... essentially monetize the fuck out of the fame that you know, really kind of traumatic experience had given her. And she is, it's really interesting, she doesn't do that baby voice that you've seen her doing so many other things. Like, this is a businesswoman talking, and she's completely honest, and she says, sometimes I hear clicks and shutters while I sleep. And she says, my followers are my friends. I travel 250 days a year. It's so lonely. I've been fucked over by everyone in my life, but never my followers. My mum doesn't understand why I give my phone number to them. I am available to them at all times. I'm obsessed with them. I need them. Absolutely fascinating. I've never seen that kind of insight from her or from another, like, very popular celebrity. They also have Hailey Baldwin, who is now Mrs. Justin Bieber. Talking about her career on Instagram, there's this really ironic moment where she says, you know, some of these girls, they just come onto Instagram, they get like a billion followers in a day and they're famous overnight, and it's like, sweetheart, you're 22, that's you.
Yeah.
She says the most she's ever been paid for an Instagram post is $150,000. And then they've got Fat Jewish, everyone's favourite Instagram Instagrammer, who's this guy called Josh Ostrovsky. Him and Paris Hilton do an Instagram live saying that they've noticed, completely fabricated, they say they've noticed a trend for baby DJs, but these baby DJs don't have the right apparel. So they say they've created the right apparel, so like tie-dyed onesies and like sort of rave baby bottles. He says it's complete fake news, and the internet buys it, and he's like, that creates demand, so we now have to make this product line. He's a master of this kind of thing. He's very funny, and he seems by far the most adjusted. All the others is actually quite sad. He said he did it again when he claimed that Louboutin had made sneakers made out of dehydrated kale. He got like inundated with requests, Louboutin being like, hey, I really want to buy some of your dehydrated kale sneakers. He created this wine called White Girl Rosé as a joke. In response to...
You and I would be chugging it down.
In response to the Hamptons running out of rosé one year, it made him laugh so much that the Hamptons had run out of rosé that he invented White Girl Rosé and thought he'd go down there and flog it as a joke. It's now the most successful canned rosé in America.
That's so funny.
The one I found really interesting... Well, I found them all interesting, obviously, because it's my absolute... Like, this was created for me, this documentary, was the child of two Russian immigrants who operates under the name Slut Whisperer. He's called Kirill. He basically goes to clubs and he douses women's bare breasts in champagne, and they love it. They get tattoos of his name, Slut Whisperer, on their arse. And he is riveted by it. He's like, why do these women want to sleep with me? Why do they want tattoos? These misogynistic tattoos. He says, you know, after I do gigs like this, I don't think he really knows what he inhabits. His parents think that he's reflecting society back at them.
Mm.
And maybe he started it like that. I don't think he has any idea anymore. He says he hates people. And he has to be drunk to sleep. And he's desperate to get out of what he's created, but he doesn't know how to make money in any other way. I find meme culture fascinating. I spoke to an arts professor once who told me that internet memeology, so a meme to be really nerdy about it, is anything that gets repeated. So it can be a picture, which is what we commonly see now overlaid with text, you know, yeah. those ones on Instagram. It can be a video, a saying, a behaviour. For example, the baby shark dance, the behaviour. The Professor Kelly video, you know, the BBC Dad one, when Marion comes in the background. There's lots in America like, damn, Daniel, or Cash Me Outside. I mean, Dolly's just going to glaze over, but there's a ton of them. And he says it's actually not unlike folklore. It's a story that gets retold and relayed with meaning and says a lot about where we are as a culture at that time. Thank you, Dolly. I think so too.
That is interesting.
So, for example, Rihanna's dress, she wore this like insane yellow dress at the Met Gala a couple of years ago, and it got memed. Like, there were new memes coming out every 5 minutes. It was turned into an omelette, it was a pizza, it was a baby duck being hatched. Anyway, the people who create these videos that go viral, as the documentary shows, are incredibly clever. They're really quick. It's incredibly stressful. It is literally all about the likes. It's all about the engagement. There's always someone that will come along and do a better meme, a smarter meme. I think it's an art in itself to be able to get millions of people to wake up and howl with laughter at something you've written. I mean, Space Ghetto, for God's sake. That's a meme. Paris Hilton says this very resonant bit, though, which I'd like to end. A segment that could go on for a very long time. I've been a 21-year-old for the past 2 decades. It's Groundhog Day. I think that's pretty interesting. I think that says a lot about people who exist on the internet. Gear change. I really enjoyed Hannah Gadsby and Roxane Gay's conversation for The Guardian.
Oh, I haven't read that.
You'd love it. Came out, I think, the weekend before last. Anyone who loves either of them or both of them, I suggest you check it out. It's written as a conversation at Roxane Gay's house between the two of them. So that's really interesting. Definitely check that out. Another brilliant piece was on the blackfishing phenomenon for British Vogue by Rennie Edo Lodge.
What's blackfishing?
This was fascinating. Blackfishing is the appropriation of black body types by women who aren't black. And it's come into the news recently as various white female Instagram influencers, such as Emma Hallberg, have been accused of masquerading as black or mixed race women. So their makeup and hairstyling, braids, extreme fake tan, says Rennie, revel in a kind of ethnic ambiguity. The blackfishing argument, Rennie says, is not without credence. Cultural appropriation is galling to a historically oppressed community. But, she says, the larger issue for her is that the black woman espoused on Instagram by these women is a caricature. No woman, she says, has this body. She says, I know a lot of black women and I'm yet to meet a black Jessica Rabbit. And she calls it a collective cognitive dissonance, a racialized body standard which is as unattainable as white runway model thinness. It's such a brilliant, relevant piece, completely breaking down and offering a totally new dimension to this Instagram blackfishing. And we are lucky to have Rennie herself reading a bit out for us now.
Online, black women are overwhelmingly represented by images of us with big breasts, tiny waists, a flat stomach, thick thighs, very wide hips, and a big bum. Offline, lots of black women have one or more of those attributes, but very rarely all of them combined. We are tall and short, fat or thin, pear-shaped, pot-bellied. I spend time around talented, intelligent and image-conscious black women on a regular basis. Very few actually look like the black Jessica Rabbit. That's why there are social media accounts dedicated to collating images of women who do. Some accounts, of which the blackfishing women ended up being celebrated on, unchallenged. This racialized body standard is as unattainable as white runway model thinness. It seems to be down to a strenuous training routine, a random assortment of genetics, or Brazilian butt lift surgery. Yet we find ourselves getting defensive about it. We claim that the blackfishing women of Instagram are stealing black women's style. A fairish charge, although you can swap bodycon and heels for vintage and trainers without losing your black card. Or our body shapes, without acknowledging that many of our bodies don't look like that.
And lastly, I found the model, actor and Paralympian Amy Mullins interview in Porter magazine. Super interesting, with a lot of food for thought. She says she loathes the term disabled, and she says it's factual to say that I am a bilateral below the knees amputee. It's subjective opinion as to whether I am disabled because of that. And That was real, and I overused this phrase, real food for thought. It reminded me of a 19-year-old Formula 4 driver, Billy Munger, who recently had a crash resulting in both legs being amputated, but is now back competing against, quote-unquote, able-bodied peers in Formula 3. I think it raises really interesting questions about the language we use to identify the bodies of others and the language that they might prefer to use about their own bodies. And indeed, it suggests that ability is one of opinion, not fact.
Yeah.
So that was also a really brilliant
read. I hadn't thought of it in that way.
It's in the current issue of Porter magazine, and she's a fucking incredible lady, Amy Mullins. I've got a big crush on her and her husband, Rupert Friend. He's also very beautiful.
Yeah, very beautiful.
I'd like both of them for tea. Oof, that sounded, sorry, oddly sexual. Apologies. Apologies to everyone if you might be eating your mince pies. Dolly, what have you been enjoying this week?
I accidentally happened upon, on Amazon, a series commentary of Transparent Series 1 with the cast, crew and writers. And it's so, so good. I don't know how
I'm surprised you hadn't... I felt like you had mined Transparent.
So did I.
Until it had become opaque.
Very good. So did I. I thought I... Because I've literally watched every series now 4 times. And I... It was when I was feeling really, really rubbish last week. And I just went onto Amazon and it came up and it just said audio commentary. And the first episode was... So the thing that's really interesting about it is it's a real kind of time capsule. It's a real moment in time because it's... I think they recorded the audio commentary before it had been released worldwide. So Jeffrey Tambor and Jill Soloway narrate the first one.
But isn't that lovely because they recorded it without the external views, pressures, biases.
And they're so green. They're so green in it. It's so sweet to listen to. And I know it's now tainted with this awful thing that happened on the set and Jeffrey Tambor is no longer there.
Yeah,
I know
that. We talked about that a lot.
But I also think... that as someone who wants to make films and wants to make television, I'm fascinated by Jill Soloway's process. And she does it in the way she directs, in the way that she makes things, in the way that she writes, is the most thoughtful, organic, hippie-ish, intrinsic.
I think she might be your number one idol.
I love her. When you watch the series with the audio commentary, you realise why it is such a special, hyper-real, authentic treat of a show. And it's because every choice was imbued with so much thought. And you get that vibe off her when she's talking generally about how she creates and how she writes and how she directs and how she runs a set. But when you have her literally commenting scene by scene on choices... it's amazing. And there's one, I think it's episode 3.
Oh, I want to see that with every film.
Oh my God, it's so good. Apparently the funniest one that you can watch.
I would like to see it with The Holiday.
Apparently the funniest one that you can watch is Ridley Scott, who's famously grumpy in all of his. And apparently in the film A Good Year, as the Universal logo comes up, he's like, "Hello, my name's Ridley Scott. This is a film set in Provence. And if you don't know where that is, you're a fucking idiot." And it's so
brilliant.
He does these famous audio commentaries of him just being so kind of mardy throughout the whole thing. But there's this amazing moment in, I think it's episode 3 or 4. If anyone watched it, the first series of Transparent, it's when Sarah goes to Tammy's house, who she's been having an affair with. She's married to a man, she has an affair with a woman, and she goes to Tammy's house and she's going mad because she wants Tammy to leave her wife to be with her. And there's this one moment, and it's the episode where I think it's Jill, the woman who plays Sarah, the woman who plays Shelley, Gabby Hoffman who plays Ali, and J.D. Plass who plays Josh. So it's the whole family, basically, other than Jeffrey in that episode. And they're all having this kind of big, loud conversation throughout the you watch the episode sort of muted. And there's this bit where Sarah's character says to Tammy, she's like filled with emotion, and she says, "Tell her about me. Tell her about me. I want you to go in there and tell her about me." And Jill Soloway says, "This was it's just like a throwaway line." And she said, "This bit was so important to me when I was writing it, because what Sarah's character is unconsciously referring to there is the fact that she grew up in a household of a secret woman in the household, which was the woman that her father knew that she was.
That's her latently saying.
So that's her latently saying. So and Jill, who grew up in a house with a trans parent who didn't come out until she was 70, she said, I now look back, and all that was echoing in our house was a woman banging on the door saying, I'm here, tell them about me.
God, so that was such a
That was in two lines. So this is like, for someone who, it's just magic to me to understand the psychology and the craft that goes into to a show like that.
Yeah.
And it makes me realise how much skill it takes to write something seemingly so natural and loose and off the cuff, how much skill it takes. So I just loved it. I watched the whole thing in an afternoon. It was so, so great. I then, after that, went and searched Jill Soloway, as I always do, on the podcast store just to see if there were any new interviews that I hadn't listened to. And there were loads that coincided with her memoir, She Wants It, one of which was an interview on a podcast called All of It. And she spoke about a bunch of different things in a very intelligent way, as she always does. But something I found particularly interesting is she talks about how strange it was for her when her body changed very rapidly at a very young age and she suddenly had a very womanly
figure. I
think
that's so disorientated for so many people. Yeah. I can't be the only person who found getting their period like really galling.
Yeah,
like that's the only word I can use for it, is galling. I was furious my body hadn't hung on for a bit longer.
But I think as well, there's what she describes so beautifully a lot is, especially in her first collection of stories, Tiny Ladies in Shiny Pants, she talks about this. It's like a very specific feeling of vertigo that you have when you are still a child and you feel
that
like
was
a child.
My thing, I wasn't ready to be, to me periods meant you were a woman. And I was saying, which I think is a, I think that's a miscommunication in our culture.
I agree.
Is the idea that when you get your period, you are a woman. Mm. But you can get your period at 9 and you can get your period at 16 and you're not a fucking woman at 9.
No. She talks about that very thing and she says, you know, how strange it is when you feel the gaze changing and you don't feel ready to receive that gaze or ever ready to receive that gaze.
I think that is such a common experience. And to be fair, I think boys' bodies changing as well can be really traumatizing, but it's not so external. You don't have this fucking mouth.
And I think the difference is as well, which is the clip that I'm going to insert here, Charlie, is the idea that she felt powerless to this body and she felt almost overwhelmed and scared by the new power that it had, but she also felt excited. And so by a kind of degree of internalised misogyny where she recognised...
She knew she had a bartering tool.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I went from being a person with thoughts and a mind to attempting to navigate what men wanted from me. And I think because I was a curious person and an ambitious person, I didn't experience it as trauma. I was like, oh, this body is an all-access pass to new experiences. I can get into any room I want to get into. So I'm going because I want to see. I want to see what it's like to meet famous guys. I was putting myself in experiences where I was re-experiencing myself as an object over and over again, attempting to have subjectivity out of it by pretending like I was consenting to all of it, when in fact I wasn't tuned into my body whatsoever. I didn't know what I wanted. I was letting or allowing things to happen that I wasn't sure if I wanted them to happen. And I think it's kind of a tragedy.
I read a great piece on the psychology of childhood teddies by my friend, the brilliant journalist Moya Sana.
What was that for?
The Guardian. And it's all about why we become so attached to childhood teddies and kind of blankets and comforters, and why the psychology of why they're so potent and can be potent until your last dying day, and why they mean so much. It's a really, really good piece. And she speaks to a lot of different case studies of people who are very, very attached to childhood toys and the kind of stories behind that. And then she weaves
through. When you said that, I was like, so she's just interviewing all the blankies. The new blankies, the old blankies, the big blankies.
She does a Frost Nixon searing interview with a little blankie. Yeah, so it's a great piece. And here's something that she said in it that I find very interesting. A transitional object tends to be chosen in the first 6 months of life and to have qualities reminiscent of the mother. It is soft, it can be stroked, cuddled and bitten.
and on a symbolic level, it links to maternal care. This helps to smooth the edges of the mother's absence. As gaps between feeds grow, the psychologist explains, space opens up between baby and mother, occupied by the special object.
Interesting, that's true. You do start to introduce, like, yeah, as a, obviously like a recent... That's exactly what I've done. I've tried, yeah, to give her something
your,
that
it's
suits
in your
her
absence.
Because I am not
exactly
going to be there to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is kind of, you know, what that comes to represent and what you hold close to you.
Some
you know,
stinky
far
bit of fabric.
Off, maybe even years and years and years away when your mummy isn't even here. You can see why it would become even more important. So it was a really, really lovely, fascinating piece. I was moved to tears by Natasha Lunn's Conversations on Love newsletter. She did a Christmas edition.
This is such a brilliant newsletter. I can't, I'm not just like licking ass because she's a friend of
no,
ours.
No, it's
but I can't believe
incredible.
This content is free.
I know.
And she has like a very brilliant full-time job at Red Magazine. But I have bought so many books and learnt so many things from her newsletters. And it is, she's got a special...
It is a special thing, and I'm sure it will grow and grow to different mediums as time goes on. But for now, it is just a wonderful free treat to get in your inbox. And she interviews fascinating people about everything on the subject of love, and it's very far-reaching. And I really applaud her bravery and her honesty in the most recent newsletter, where she shared the very, very sad news that she very recently miscarried, newly married, and... she shared this story about the kindness of strangers. Long-term readers of this newsletter might remember that one of the forms of love I've come across exists in connection between strangers. As Alain de Botton told me, that's really what we mean by love. Beneath the fancy word, we're talking about a connection. I experienced this form of love when I called British Airways customer support from the hospital and a woman called Rachel picked up. Dan and I were supposed to be flying to Mauritius on our honeymoon the next day, but the doctor said we couldn't travel because I would need to have the operation to remove the baby first. Slumped on the hospital floor, we took turns at being on hold to BA. I told myself that if anyone picked up, I would pass the phone back to Dan, because how could I read out a booking reference to a stranger when my heart was on fire? But when Rachel said, "Hello, how can I help you?" I didn't hang up. I told her slowly and calmly that we wouldn't be able to make our flights and needed to organise a refund. When she asked why, I told her. She said, "I'm so, so sorry for your loss," and I knew that she meant it. She gave me her direct number so I wouldn't have to repeat my story to another stranger. She listened and demanded as little of me as she could. At my most fragile, she comforted me. She said, "I'm going to see what I can do for you," with such genuine kindness that it made me cry. That week I had cried for many things. What was, what never was, the wobble in my mum's voice as I told her, the look in my husband's eyes, my tired body, all that pointless blood, those pointless plans, that tiny heart, the name we gave it, the small yet mighty speck of sadness that had settled in my soul. But in that moment, I cried happy tears for the bright kindness of a stranger. That was the lesson. Even in the rubble of broken hopes, there is love.
Oh, Tash, that's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
And then she goes on to ask lots of different writers and contributors to share moments of connection with strangers over the years that have mattered to them. And it's just a perfect Christmas read. It's lovely.
That sounds utterly gorgeous, and I can't wait to dig that out of my inbox. Last month or so, we've been collating our favourite Christmas surveys for this episode. You may say, "Pandora, how many surveys do you really get?" And I shall say, "Hi-lo listeners, most of this podcast is conducted with surveys that I am sent by people I have not subscribed to and need never hear again, except for what you give to this podcast."
And we doff our hat to Foxy Bingo.
Dog with a bone you are, Cremant. You know, did we tell them we're drinking Cremant?
No, we are drinking Marks and Spencer's Cremant.
Oh, no,
maybe we did tell them.
We have told them. We're not. By the way, we're genuinely not drunk. We're both quite tired, and we've been through the ringer. We've been through the ringer.
I'm going to give you a bit more cassis.
So I'm going to kick us off with one that will really resonate with you, Dolly. According to the UK's leading vegan and vegetarian brand, Cauldron Foods, Veggie Wellington, was the best and most preferred Christmas meal, followed by the nut roast. I love a nut roast.
Love
and
a nut
veggie
roast.
Pig in blankets. As the Hilo's resident veggie, are you surprised? What are your veggie faves?
Surprised about the vegetarian Wellington, because I think that's a little bit of a fuss.
Have you made a veggie welly?
I've made a mushroom one before, and it's a little bit of a fuss. I have some very
Wellingtons
serious...
Wellingtons in general are quite fussy.
Yeah, fussy.
Yeah, quite fussy.
I have a very serious thing to say about nut roasts, and that is...
I love them.
I have found the best nut roast recipe of all time that I'm actually going to include it in the show notes.
Did you find it in your own book? I've heard there are recipes in it. I haven't looked myself, but...
No, it's not in my own book, Pandora.
It's... You sounded so prissy. It's not in my own book, Pandora.
It's by the Hairy Bikers.
Oh, yeah.
Which I know I do a good impression. And
are you one of them as well?
Yes. And it's so yummy. We have it every year at Pretendmas. And the meat eaters eat it every year because it's so good.
I love that.
So I'll include that in the show notes.
So you sort of answered that. You're a bit surprised. What's your favourite? A nut roast?
I love a nut roast.
Nut roast. Okay.
But it has to be like a nutty, cheesy nut roast.
Okay.
New research of over 7,600 UK adults by sports retailer Decathlon has revealed that Brits will consume, on average, 4,027 calories on Christmas Day this year. This is an average of 2 days' worth of calories.
Yeah, that's quite impressive. I can imagine that being... I'm underwhelmed by that. I thought it would be 5,000
calories. I have
to
say I'm underwhelmed.
Why don't you tell everyone about your very important moment that, if I'm honest, makes me feel a little bit sick when I think about it.
Okay, it was 1 year and it was over the course of a whole day. I had 19 roast potatoes.
To be fair, that was cruel because over the course of a whole day, I once had 7, you know, like normal sized sausages, not chipolatas.
I thought it was more than that. You've told me that story
before. 7 or 11.
I think it was 11.
Maybe that's in my head because in America, isn't that the store, the 7-Eleven?
Yeah. I still think it was more than 7. You told me it before.
Okay, if it makes you feel better that I had 11...
It was 19 chipolatas.
No, chipolatas. I could take down 24 of those. Those are like gyoza. I'll see. I'll have a little challenge over Christmas. Controversial klaxon alert. I don't like Christmas food.
Really? But what don't you like?
Where do I start? I don't like turkey.
I don't like turkey.
I don't like roast parsnip. Well, you're vegetarian. Of course you don't like turkey.
No, but as in I love meat. I just don't eat it for ethical reasons because I'm a very good person, Pandora.
I don't like parsnips. I don't like Christmas pudding. I don't like mince pies.
You like roast potatoes, though, don't
you? I don't like brandy butter. All right. Wouldn't ever cook them. Wouldn't ever choose them.
Good God.
I don't like roasts.
Bread sauce?
No, I like canapés.
Canapé Wilnapé.
Luckily, canapés come to my house to die. I did actually catch my husband and sister having a completely serious and quite formal conversation about the order of canapés that they were going to eat this year. So I heard my husband...
What canapés do you have at Christmas?
Oh, we have like sliders. So like mini burgers.
You have mini burgers?
Yeah. We have mini beef Wellington, like cheesy... We'll have like arancini.
Oh my God, this is very fancy.
Yeah, you have about 24 each before lunch, yeah.
Lovely. I do love a canapé.
Sometimes Mum's like, I thought we wouldn't put the rest on because lunch is coming. And I'm like, are you crazy, woman? Lunch is coming.
I agree with you, though, about... I think roasts in this country are very... There's too much pomp and ceremony over them.
I can't bear them. Give me a nice pad thai.
Yeah. I just don't think... I don't seem to be as monomaniacal about roasts as everyone else is.
Who are you?
Monomaniacal.
Who's she?
It means obsessive.
Does it actually?
Yeah.
God, you can't say epistemological, but you can say monomaniacal. Monomaniacal.
No, I'm with you. And here's another thing as well.
I call my second child monomaniacal.
And this is not going to gain us any new listeners. In fact, it will probably lose us some.
No, please go ahead.
Not that into gravy.
No, I like it when it's with, like, gammon, because you get this kind of, like, sweet, sticky, maple-y jus.
Yeah. I'm into a jus.
I'm into a jus.
Yeah.
One for you, one for you. Anyway, so you know there's an exhibition called Food, Glorious Food at Charles Dickens' old house in London.
Oh, no, sounds, I didn't know
this. Sounds very you. He was obsessed with food, not unlike you. And the exhibition is dedicated to his writing, whether through fiction or letters, about food. I love this quote from the Doughty Street Museum, which is the museum in his old house. The curator, Louisa Price, said, "A lot of the correspondence at Christmas concerned the turkey." And she said this is really moving and really important to him because his appreciation of good food came from his childhood experience of hunger. He often uses food, as Laura Freeman wrote about in her book, The Reading Cure, to show the differences between classes. For example, meat, fruit and preserves were a luxury of the upper class. And I just wanted to read out this lovely bit in one of his letters. "My dear Beard, we propose giving the turkey until 4 tomorrow in order that he may be well done. Be punctual and don't place too much reliance on our excellent friend Warburton. I arrived home at 1 o'clock this morning, dead drunk, and was put to bed by my loving missus. We're about to go to Chapman's sister's quadrille party, to which you will imagine I feel remarkably disposed." And then there was another one, writing to his publishers. "My dear sirs, I determined not to thank you for the turkey until it was quite gone, in order that you might have a becoming idea of its astonishing capabilities. The last remnant of that blessed bird made its appearance at breakfast yesterday. I repeat it, yesterday, the other portions having furnished 4 7 grills, 1 boil and a cold lunch or two. Absolutely fascinated by turkey."
I would love to go to that exhibition. I know, it was made for me.
It's on till the 22nd of April, so you've got time.
The main question is, though, do they take you into the room where he wrote the Muppet Christmas Carol?
Before we go on to our next survey, should we have some Christmas cracker jokes?
Yes, please.
They're just in your little bowl there. There you go. I've screwed them up for you.
Thank you. Define claustrophobia. A fear of Father Christmas. So it's meant to be clout.
It's claustrophobia.
Claustrophobia.
Oh, I put so much effort.
Sorry. No, that was good, that one.
You can't also... Sorry, just quickly. You can't do Christmas jokes deadpan.
Okay, I'm sorry.
They're not meant to be ironic.
What did the grape say when the elephant stepped on it?
I don't know.
Nothing. It just gave off a little whine.
One more.
Okay. Who hides in a bakery at Christmas?
I wrote these and I can't remember.
A mince spy. And Rory, you would be very easy to seduce.
Hello. These took me ages.
No, I enjoyed those, thank
Such a
you.
Shit crowd.
No, that was lovely. I loved them.
Well, there's more coming later.
Okay, good.
A very disappointing, but perhaps not altogether surprising survey for you here. According to YouGov, 60 million Christmas presents could be wasted this Christmas. Over 57% of people in the UK who celebrate Christmas receive at least one unwanted gift on average at Christmas. Topping the unwanted gift list, bath products.
Very shocking.
Box set. Candles. Chocolate. Socks.
I always want bath products and I always want candles because those are things that I always feel guilty about buying for myself.
And socks, personally. Always running out of socks.
Yeah, I love a nice sock.
Just
actually,
one.
I... Just one's fine. I would say if there are any male listeners out there, of which we know there are one or two, if you're struggling to think of something to buy for a woman in your life...
A lady pal.
I would say lovely candle... Nice bath oil, good pyjamas.
But not a Christmas candle. My mother is the only person I know that likes, like, a mince pie and cinnamon candle, which literally makes me want to vomit on the smell. Yeah.
No. You need what would be just like a classic... Anything like herbal.
Yeah.
Anything
an ivy,
herbal.
Ivy, ferny.
Yeah.
Yeah, fabulous.
Or a magazine subscription.
Yeah,
that's
the
another
best.
Great.
That's what I get
present.
Those every Christmas. My mother-in-law gives me a magazine subscription every year. You gave me a New Yorker one once.
I did, and an Elle one.
I love that. Oh, yes, thank you very much. What was your worst gift?
Not worst, but strangest
I
gift.
I know what this is. He didn't like it when you mentioned it.
I know, he hates when I bring this up on the high legs.
It's not like you've done it often. All written about it.
My brother every year gives me a bottle of Malibu for Christmas.
Do you like Malibu?
He's sort of in a nostalgic way.
I genuinely don't mean this insultingly, but you'll drink anything, won't you?
I don't love Sambuca.
Okay, but would you drink it?
No, no. Really? I do like a Malibu and Coke. But just in a sort of fun, nostalgic way. But Ben seems to think I've got this real love of it.
Which probably does it just to piss you off now.
Yeah, I will 100% be getting a bottle from him this year for Christmas. What about you?
My worst gift was from a member of my extended family, who I shall not name, who used to send me secondhand books with the front pages cut out from when someone had given them to her and written to her when I was little. It would have actually been quite wonderful and romantic had they been remotely personal or applicable, but they'd be like a 1976 manual on golfing. I wish I kept them now. My best gift ever was when I was about 10 and it was a hi-fi.
Oh my god, hi-fis. Oh,
and it was like wooden. It was fucking chic.
It was fucking chic.
What was your best ever present?
Furby.
My god, I remember once I didn't sleep all night because my Furby was having a bad night. Mm. And I was at boarding school at the time, and the head nun came in and said, "Have you suggested taking the batteries out?" And I was horrified.
It's like killing it.
Yeah, I was killing it.
Yeah. No, I was...
What was your Furby called? Mine didn't have a name, actually.
Mine didn't have a name.
God, they were creepy.
Oh, I loved them. I loved them. I remember the Christmas I got a Furby. I was so, so happy. I can remember the plasticky Furby smell. I used to nuzzle up to it.
I got one from FAO Schwartz when I was in America with my mum when I was 12, I think. God, those were a phenomenon. 37% of those surveyed said they would be happy to receive a charitable donation as a present. I'd definitely be happy with that.
Yeah,
and there
I
are
would
lots
like that.
Of brilliant charities you can donate to or support or volunteer at this Christmas. I recently sent a Christmas shoebox to the Red Cross. Crisis always need volunteering, particularly on Christmas Day. And of course, anyone who isn't lucky enough to spend Christmas at home with their family, they are all so deserving of our support. All the children in Great Ormond Street, there's one very special little boy that I'm thinking of in there this Christmas, and that I know Father Christmas will come to visit. All the women and children in women's shelters, so that's Women's Aid if you want to get in touch. There are so many more than that, but that's just to touch on a few to give some inspiration of where to start.
We did something new this year with our pretend Christmas with my uni girlfriends. Because we always do Secret Santa.
Yeah.
And India had the idea that this year we should all donate to a local homeless day centre in awesome. London Bridge called the Manor Centre. So, and it was so easy. And if you're all exchanging gifts, all you have to do is, if you go onto their website, they will give a list of what they're after. So we all just bought a bag of things each, and then Indy dropped it off. And it literally is no effort at all.
That will absolutely, the whole 60 million unwanted gifts each year, it will eradicate that. It will mean when people can't really afford to, or I'm going to say it, are a bit too lazy to get their shit in gear to, you know, contribute to charity or to do anything, a present can do that for you. Mm. You just rerouted it for them.
Our final Christmas research is the recent survey that shows that almost half, 47% of parents across the UK, have admitted they would never tell their child the truth about Father Christmas given the choice, saying you should always believe. Panda, when did your relationship with Father Christmas begin and end? Indeed, did it ever end?
It began when he came to the chimney and he said, "Panda, people aren't going to believe you, but you just have to know that you are my favourite. You're really special and you've done some pretty incredible things, actually." I agree with that. I don't think that parents should tell their children about Father Christmas unless they get to like 18 and it's awkward at family gatherings. I think it's something you find out in the playground and it's really organic, and you come home like I did at 8 and you go, "Oh my God, Josie told me Father Christmas
was
real."
Yeah.
And then my mum will say, I think she said, "Do you want him to be real?" And I said rather furiously, "I don't want him to be real if he's not real." And she said, "Well,
forever the journalist, even then.
I think
then.
He's... You know, give
always
me an answer, woman."
The real...
I think she was like, if you want him to be... I think that was quite cool, actually. I think I'll do that with that. I think she was like, if you want him to be Father Christmas, he is Father Christmas. She was sort of giving me an out. Mm. She was like, but if not, don't worry. I'll be stuffing those fucking stockings for the rest of my life. So no, I don't think it's a parent's job unless they are homeschooled. And then maybe, that sounds a really stupid thing to say, but I found out a lot of things in the playground that if you're homeschooled, you might not.
Yeah.
What do you think? No?
My mum is still to this day has never said he's not real.
She still puts on wings when she thinks you've lost a tooth.
Well, she is that sort of a woman. I'm feeling really guilty as we're talking about this survey, because I've broken my mother's heart for the first time this year because I've told her I don't want a stocking. And I think she's quite upset about it. But I just... You know, I live in a small one-bed flat and I don't have a lot of space to store stuff. And But I'm more worried about her because she spends, you know...
I know, it's something really...
Money that I have on stuff, you know, like stuff I don't need. So
I'm
just
very excited about doing Zadie's first stocking. I mean,
but not until she's 30, I think.
My mum still gives Ollie and I a stocking, but it's hilarious. It's like deeply functional and really is what has turned me into a hoarder like her. So it will be like washing up gloves, post-it notes, 48 biros.
I used to get really lovely sweet stuff in it, but it just, a lot of it was stuff that I'd have to like put in a box somewhere. And I have just run out of space.
Yeah,
and I do think it's just like... We don't need to spend this money.
I think our generation are different. I had, just to add, the most incredible stockings ever. My mum is so creative. The way she stuffed them, there was a real knack to it. You had like a Beanie Baby centred, and then the Beanie Baby was fanned by knickers. and I would get so excited that during the night I'd try on all my new knickers. And then the socks would like be this underlayer. It was incredibly creative. It was like icing a cake. She didn't wrap them, so I'm a big fan of not wrapping in a stocking. I like it to be like an explosion.
Tumble out.
Top. Yeah, exactly. So I'm insanely excited about doing Zadie's. But what I will say is that my stocking for my husband and for my daughter are a lot smaller than my mum's. Mm. My mum is definitely from that generation where, and this is obviously definitely from a position of privilege, because I know for some people this is like not an economic choice. It is the only route they have to buying stuff.
Yeah.
But my mum is from a generation where Poundland and lots of those things were actually really exciting for them, that they could go in and buy loads of shit because she hadn't been able to buy shit.
Yeah.
So she gets quite excited by like Tat. And I'll tease her about this. And she, like, gives amazing stuff, don't get me wrong. But it's the, I think, which is good because every generation learns. You know, the generation before us was discovering kind of affordable consumerism and being able to shop wantonly. Whereas our generation, thank God, is learning more about, like, sustainability and accumulation. So my stockings for my husband and my daughter are a lot smaller. And... I try and put things that are a bit more expensive so we'll have longevity. But listen, this is not to diss my mum, because she is the ultimate
Mrs. Claus,
stocking or otherwise. A few more cracker jokes, please.
How did Mary and Joseph figure out baby Jesus was exactly 7 pounds, 9 ounces?
How did they?
They had a way in a manger. That is good now. That is good. I like that one.
Such a hard taskmaster. One more.
Okay.
Oh, I
know, sweetheart. Thank you. What do you get if you eat Christmas decorations?
Oh, it's a good one. Yeah, I know this.
Tinselitis. Should I do one more?
Yeah.
What happened to the man who stole an advent calendar? He got 25 days.
He's all
messed up. Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me.
A quick Ask the Hilo Christmas edition. We opened it up to Twitter at ArianeLs18. I think we need your opinions on the age-old question of Christmas pudding versus Christmas cake. Quick fire, Dolly, which one?
Christmas pudding.
Ugh, neither. At Rachel, HW87, Yorkshire puddings for Christmas dinner?
I don't like Yorkshire puddings.
I love Yorkshire puddings. At All the Aims, as the year is coming to an end, I've stopped dating. Going into the new year, I'm going to try and meet people IRL and not on apps. Is this absolute madness? No.
No. If that's what you want, you should go out and get it, girl.
You go for it, All the Aims. At Juliette Ruissel, the only important unanswered Christmas conundrum. Is Hugh Grant a Tory or New Labour in Love Actually? New Labour.
100% Tory.
At Kirsty Stella 05. Will you be arranging Christmas Day around the Queen's speech?
Never watched it.
Never?
Never.
I mainly watch it, yes. At Ellie Louise WO. Money stress. Not really a question.
Here's my top tip. There was such a long time where I couldn't afford to buy presents for my family at Christmas, so I got loads of Kilner jars on eBay, and then I made a massive vat of Delia Smith chutney, and even to this day, and then I tied nice ribbons around it for everyone, and even
that's
to this
a
day,
lovely present.
They
I've
still
that kind of
prefer the year that I made everyone chutney, so that's what I suggest.
Won't be one of the 60 million gifts given away. And at math_Philkins, it's only Monday, I'm genuinely worried. Post-work Christmas drinks every night this week might kill me. Any tips? Nah, give in to it, won't kill you. We're going to see out this Christmas episode with a recent piece on Cosmopolitan that I read via a Hilo listeners called 24 Questions That Still Need Answering About Love Actually. Because I have watched Love Actually 3 times so far this December, and it is very funny. Like, what is Natalie's job? Biscuit provider? What was Mark actually going to do with that video of Juliet? Wank bank? Is that why everything is covered in cellophane?
Definitely.
Why did Karen's husband think he'd found a Joni Mitchell album that Karen didn't already own? Why is Jamie's brother wearing shoes mid-sexy time?
Interesting.
Can Tony time travel? And I'll just end on, good King Wenceslas looked out on the field of... Thank you very much to everyone who listened to the Hilo this year. It's been high, it's been low. Have a very Merry Christmas. You can rate, subscribe. Oh, you can do all that shit. Have a great
Happy
Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. I'm driving home for Christmas. Oh, I can't wait to see those faces. I'm driving home for Christmas, yeah. Well, I'm moving down that line. And it's been so long, but I will be there. I sing this song to pass the time away.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.